Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Joel Steelman. I'd like to welcome you all to the 2024 Pestola podcast series. I'm really excited today to be kicking off the conversations in education and pediatric endocrinology with Dr. John Oden. Dr. Oden is a member of the Pestola Board of Directors like myself and is a pediatric endocrinologist. He's the division chief at the University of Arkansas Pediatric Endocrine Division. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself, John, if you would.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me and having me on the show. So I have been a pediatric endocrinologist for the past 20 years almost. Goodness, I finished fellowship at Duke University in 2003. And then shortly thereafter, I stayed on as faculty at Duke for about a year or so, and then accepted a position at Dallas Children's Hospital, which I served there for about 11 years. And then Arkansas Children's Hospital and UAMS to be their section chief in 2015. Since then, I've been working with a fabulous group of people up here in Arkansas and building a program that we can all be proud of.
Wow, that's amazing. 2015, it seems like time has really passed. You've been a close by colleague since I came to Cook Children's Medical Center in 2008. Yeah. And we're very excited too. And you're going to hopefully give us a little bit of a taste of your talk that's coming up here in a few months in April. But I know that you have a real passion as far as education. So share with us a little bit about some of the topics you're going to be covering in your talk and a little bit about your own efforts that you've made with education so far at University of Arkansas.
So the talk itself is going to be primarily an introduction to this Pestola Education Committee that you alluded to just a little while ago. You and I have been talking about this for the past year. Mm. And I think every conference, every committee has its own little subset of people that focuses on education and how that is done. And as we move forward, as we know, ACGME is kind of starting to make changes and recommendations on how we train our resident staff. And I think we as endocrinologists have to make similar changes to keep pace with those recommendations.
Right.
And to that, I wanted to kind of introduce this committee and open up possible avenues for people to join our committee and help shape the way at least Pestola focuses on education, if that makes sense.
Sure. Let me ask you. So from your standpoint, is your focus that you envision more towards like education of trainees, or do you see this as something that can cut across, all segments within pediatric endocrinologists from the seasoned, people, that are like yourself and myself that are, have been out in doing it for a long time, all the way to people that maybe are trying to decide as a pediatric resident, do they want to do pediatric endocrinology? What's kind of your thoughts or focus?
I like to think of this committee as being something that can reach any stage of training and competency. I think I sent out an email to the Pestola board a couple of years ago with a list of topics that I myself have to admit that I am not fully comfortable with if faced with a question. Like, for example, if I'm on call one night and I get called about a two-day-old with diabetes insipidus, how do you approach that particular patient? And even though I've been doing this for 20 years and I have a rough framework of what needs to happen, what labs need to happen, what medications I would choose, how I would fluid resuscitate an infant like that, it does require a little bit of backstage thinking and maybe a pause in that conversation where I would say, hey, I'm going to call you back. I need to make some calculations. It's harder as a resident, as a pediatric resident. I remember saying, okay, I'm going to do amoxicillin at this dose and I'm going to do IV fluids at this rate and et cetera, et cetera. And it was kind of rote memory. But when we're talking about very specific and complex issues like that or hypocalcemia in a infant or septo-optic dysplasia in a 14-year-old with seizures, I mean, those kind of things kind of bring to mind the idea that we really should have a group of people that develop maybe not protocols, but an understanding that we all practice a little bit differently. And here are some guidelines that would be helpful.
Sure. I agree with that. I think, there's within a chronology, I mean, I think you and I think appreciate the fact that there's a lot of complexity and a lot of nuances, and every patient is a little bit different. And so each of us practices differently, but I think having a common understanding and foundation is going to be important. So that's, I agree with that. I think that's going to be very helpful for everyone across all of the different spectrums. And you probably have had, you know, situations too. I know that from my standpoint, I'm oftentimes curbsided by, you know, different people, whether they're specialists outside of endocrinology or some of my colleagues that are not as far along in their career as well.
Right. And also, I think it's important for us to acknowledge that we can learn off of our trainees as much as they can learn off of us. New faculty that we've onboarded over the past couple of years, I have learned an insane amount on like bone metabolism and treatment of osteopenia and osteoporosis. Because in my fellowship at Duke, we didn't do any bone whatsoever. And so when it comes down to how to use bisphosphonates and what dose do you use and which one do you choose and what labs you use and you know, how do you treat those kids, I've learned a lot in the past couple of years. And again, I've been doing this for 20 years and I should know better, but you know, in some cases, those things are changing therapeutic modalities and new medications, different interpretations of guidelines. It's really, it's fascinating to see how our learning things and how they're developing and evolving. And it's really fun to see.
I agree. Do you see any particular area right now that you feel like is really ripe for education and an opportunity to expand our understanding? Both, you know, in the larger, you know, field of pediatric endocrinology, as well as in our particular region?
That's a great question, Joel. It's a long kind of thinking out loud. Diabetes, of course, is one of those things where we are learning more and more about the different categories and understanding the different categories, type 3C, MODY, type 2, even 1. I mean, things that we focus on every day. Can be a very slippery slope is how to manage children, especially with the new technologies that are coming out, insurance changes, different Medicaids across states, those kind of things make things very complicated. Congenital adrenal hyperplasia. I was mentored by one of the best CAH guys in the world, Perrin White, and I still learn things every day from our mentees. Bone, of course, is a really good one. And there have been some new guidelines for congenital hypothyroidism. So I think just about everything is ripe for the picking for not only research, but also quality improvement.
Definitely, I agree. So let me ask you this. I know that you like to play some games. So yep. Tell me a little bit about game theory and learning, because that's, I know, a passion of yours that you and I have talked about.
Well, to be honest, and my wife will attest to this, I'm not a fan of games at all. She tries to get me. No, I mean, I embarrassingly, I'm just not that competitive, or maybe I'm just overly competitive and I don't like to lose. I don't know, but, family nights and game days are just not my thing. That she'll get me to play card games every once in a while. But game theory is something that's very, very, is a passion of mine. It's very important to me. We do have a project that is, grant funded to develop a board game that addresses education in medical students and residents. And what it does is it creates an environment where people can learn in a fun way. So you move your board pieces and move your patient through a clinical setting based on your ability to answer some basic questions. And the difficulty of those questions gets higher as you move through the board game, and it gets higher as you are kind of farther along in your training process. It's in its infancy, honest with you, and certainly it is something that's kind of fun to do, but it's been more of a challenge than I thought it would be, because creating your own questions and answers and scoring that system becomes an issue. Now, talking about like gaming in education formally, I don't think there's been a whole lot of studies, but there have been a few small papers that have been written about board games and pediatric residency, pediatric training. And there have been some significant changes in people who play these games and board scores. And so I do want to continue that research. I am certainly, if we get our board game up and running, that's going to be one of the IRB submissions that I'm going to have for our institution, is to look at not only medical student training, but also residency training, and then perhaps in the future fellows.
I think that's great. I think, you know, there the scope of what we learn is so vast. And so, you know, it's truly a lifelong learning. I mean, I know, and I'm sure you're probably in the midst too of, you know, the maintenance of certification and exams that we have to, you know, take quarterly as part of that. So it's good though. I mean, that's a good, while it's a, in some level of pain and of extra things to do, it's also good because there's still learning that can happen. You know, it's funny when you're talking about that, I can just envision something like Monopoly, where if you do the wrong thing, you get, you know, go to jail and do not pass go.
There is a, she's a history professor in Alabama, and she has a small company that helps me create these games. And we have been in discussions about creating something like, gosh, what's the game called, where it's like you create your own civilization? And it's you know, if you have, you know, if you begin at your little game as a medical student, and you walk through, and you have to, in order to compete and build your own clinic practice, you have to answer all these questions. And as you know, as time goes on, you actually become a pediatric endocrinologist after thousands and thousands of questions are answered. It kind of creates a fun environment and a training that can move forward in a gaming environment throughout your years of practice. And you can, I think in some ways you can kind of absorb the information a little bit better, because it's just a little bit more of an engaging way, like reading a text or reading a journal article or such.
Let me ask you this. You got me a little bit off script here when you were talking about that. So I just want to ask you, you know, from the standpoint, we obviously are talking about mastery of medical information and, you know, practice style and things like that. What do you think are some things that are important for someone who's starting their career in pediatric endocrine? Let's say they're in their fellowship, or they're about to finish residency, or even a junior person. What's knowledge that they should really gain competency in outside of just knowing, you know, how to practice? So, you know, this could be things like grants or just life balance or whatever, you know, you potentially think from your experience are important pearls.
It's incredibly important to get the right mentor. I think it's incredibly important, the right person that you are comfortable with, that will steer you in the direction that you want to go in. Meaning, before you enter any project, make sure that this project leads you down the road that you want to go. Or at Duke was great. I loved Mike Freemark a lot, and he taught me a ton about pediatric endocrinology. But the project that I was on was a basic science project, and I was never interested in basic science. So what I have found from other trainees as they move through their process is that they have had mentors who kind of listened to what their mentee wanted. Maybe they didn't know they didn't want basic science, but hey, here's a guy who wants to do games, and he wants to do, you know, he's very interested in thyroid and very interested in insulin resistance. This is where I'm going to put this person and travel that along. So I think having the right mentor for the mentee is critical. The other thing I recommend to medical students and residents and fellows when I interact with them is to have an inquisitive mind and always ask questions and never be ashamed of the questions that you may ask. I was a medical student. I wasn't encouraged to do that, and I didn't have that inquisitive mind sometimes, especially in surgery. And I remember a surgical attending I just remember him being very large and bearded, and he would just rake me over the coals all the time. He always told me I didn't care for my patients as much as I should because I didn't ask those questions. I think that's very important for somebody to know. Is never be embarrassed to ask questions, never be ashamed to ask questions. Always be upfront and say, hey, I don't understand this. Why is it that this does this?
Great advice. And, you know, we're striving to make these a little bit more bite-sized. So I just had two more things I wanted to ask you. So first of all, kind of staying in the non-medical vein. So you and I had looked over the surveys that are being sent out pre-meeting. So talk a little bit about, you know, your thoughts as far as just, you know, work-life balance, quality of life, burnout, those types of things, because those are areas that are being addressed in one of your surveys.
Yeah, so it's been well known and documented over the past 5 or so years that endocrinology is one of those things where people do get burned out and they do get overworked. Understandably so. We're bright people, bright people in a bright world. And we know a lot about things that most people don't try to study. Growth, for example, something that you would expect your general practitioner to be able to kind of decipher and answer questions. I think that's a very challenging topic. And puberty, another one, very challenging topic. I can't tell you how many times that I have to see a 12-year-old kiddo that's in puberty and parents think it's too early. And that it's it's a little bit funny, right? To us, it's like, why in the world are we seeing this kiddo? But it's because the people that they're seeing as their general practitioner don't understand those, to us, basic topics, right? And so because of those issues, I've had a lot of conversations with endocrinologists from all across our region. And you just get a sense of, hey, I'm just getting tired of seeing these kids. And I'm just kind of tired of of seeing. It's a lot because we have to, you know, not only see those kids, but the kids that we actually do need to see. And it's a lot of pressure on us. And so I think it's critical for us to come up with a scheme, if you will, for clinic templates and clinic design. You know, how many clinic sessions should a 53-year-old who's been in practice for 20 years at an academic setting, how many half-day clinical sessions should I be attending every week? And I don't think the answer is 8. I don't think the answer is 7. I don't think the answer is even 6. I think it's less than that. I think we'd be able to tell our providers and interact with our community providers to say, hey, you know, referring a kiddo for who's 18 or 19 and wants to grow, but is, you know, a father of two kids, I don't think we need to talk about that. That's not something that really is an appropriate referral. And being able to do that is critical. Now, the surveys that we're sending out on, I guess, tomorrow, well, it is kind of the beginning salvo of being able to document things so we can bring that information to our leadership and say, look, you know, on average, endocrinologists are functioning in maybe 5 or 6 half-day sessions and seeing maybe 5 or 6 kiddos in those sessions. But in this group, they're seeing 8 half-day sessions and seeing 10 kids in each session. That's too much. That's going to burn people out very quickly. And follow trends in our fellowship programs, God bless us, we're not filling those slots. And because of that, I think, you know, we're losing a lot of traction as far as power. And eventually we're not going to be around. You know, you and I are going to retire in the next 10 to 15 years, I hope. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to leave open spots available unless we start picking up on our fellowship program. So I guess my point is, we have to protect the people that are here. We have to be able to give them good advice on, you know, what is too much and how much research should be doing, how much education should you be doing, how much clinic should you be doing, but also tap into a reservoir of residents and fellows or residents and medical students that could be interested in us.
Right.
But aren't going to get that exposure because now with ACGME changes and, you know, they're focusing mostly on primary care. And so I think we have to be there at the door, you know, when they're becoming medical students to say, hey, this is endocrinology. It's a great field, great people. Mm-hmm. It has great service and a great function. And I think you'll enjoy it. We run a tight ship and we're this is what we're going to do. This is what we're not going to do.
Right. I mean, I think that, you know, as I think about pediatric endocrinology, I mean, it is very, it's a very fascinating field. I mean, again, you know, I'm biased, obviously, in what I, you know, my perspective, but I think it's a fascinating field. I think the challenge really is making it a field that is going to make sense economically for someone to choose to go into after they've finished, you know, their 3 years of residency and make it a field where someone can, you know, thrive and not just, you know, get ground into the ground with all the workload that we have. The last thing I'll ask you, and then I'll turn over the floor to you to any other comments you have, is you and I have both received a recent survey about, you know, changing the fellowship from 3 years to 2 years. What are your thoughts on that? You know, both you and I did a 3-year fellowship, obviously.
Yeah. You know, I remember Basil Koblawi, who is the fellowship director at CHOP now. He used to work at Children's Hospital in Dallas. He used to talk about these things and he was a supporter of that, or at least he was back then. I don't know if he is now. I think in a certain subgroup of trainees, I think that's a very reasonable thing to offer them. I think in some cases, like in people who are interested in basic research and clinical research, something that needs a little bit of extra time to cultivate, I think that probably would be a mistake. But people who ended up doing what I did, which was mostly clinical medicine, I think it's not a bad choice. The downside to it, though, Joel, I think, just, you know, thinking out loud, would be that how do you tell the difference between a person who did a 2-year fellowship and a 3-year fellowship? When, say, for example, if they went through a 2-year fellowship, but all of a sudden want to apply for an R01 grant with the NIH,
right?
Going to have to be able to kind of sift through and see what their training was really like. And I'm sure they can, and I'm sure they will if that ever comes to pass. But that's something that comes to mind. But I think overall, it's a good thought, especially when we're talking about not being able to fill all of our slots and getting trainees through, and so we can actually see patients that mm-hmm. that really need to be seen by trained endocrinologists.
I agree. I think if somebody really just says, you know, I want to be a clinician, that's all I want to do, have no interest in doing, you know, going to the bench or doing high flying clinical research, I think, you know, that makes sense yeah. potentially for those people to give them that track. I hope, though, again, you know, I'm also a clinician myself too, but I did appreciate the opportunity to do research, and that's helped me. So I hope that people that do have that fire will, you know, have the opportunity to still get the experience they need.
I agree.
Well, let's wrap up. I got one other question for you, which is, and the floor is yours. What do you think is going to be the most exciting and compelling reason that people should choose your talk or watch your talk that's recorded after the fact?
I think the biggest thing is, I mean, we're going to go over the results of the survey that's going out tomorrow. And I hope what I'll be able to do is to prove that either that within our region, the endocrinologists that they get results from have kind of a wide array of differing ideas of how to treat really complex issues. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think something that we can plan on. But also, kind of as you alluded to, that we're going to talk a little bit about the administrative piece to endocrine and show the variability in how we approach day-to-day clinical settings. It's a very superficial survey, purposefully, because it needs to be done relatively rapidly. And it I think in things like U.S. News and World Report and some of the PES surveys that are going out, I think those become a little bit more detailed, and those details really matter in academic settings. But I think it gives you a good superficial view of what we are doing academically and administratively. And I think those are important pieces. But the other thing in my talk is going to be to introduce this Pestola Education Committee that I'm trying to develop, that I'm developing, and have kind of employed some of my faculty as volunteers to help with. But, you know, the key pieces would be developing an online education piece on the Pestola website, offering questions like MOC questions, but developed mm-hmm. by us, and so that they are ours, in developing an online journal club, developing case presentations or a listserv, something that would, you know, maybe the people that come to the talk can help me kind of sift through and decide whether or not that's actually helpful. Because every conference has these things. You know, they have, you know, ESAP for Endocrine Society, and PES has their education piece and resources for clinicians. But I think for us regionally, it would be helpful because, you know, within our region, insurance is different and Medicaid is different. Being able to get kids medications is different. Approaches are different. Mm-hmm. Body mass index is different in Arkansas than it is in Louisiana. You know, Estonians need a little bit more, you know, GLP-1 therapy than maybe in people in Louisiana. Keeping track of lectures from year to year in our Pestola conference so that we don't double up on things from year to year. Helping identify good speakers and topics, tracking board scores if people are interested in doing that. How do our fellows and faculty members do on MOC and in our board scores? Are we doing just as well nationally? And how do we make that better if we aren't? Encouraging quality improvement, encouraging research, including encouraging innovation, like my board game. I mean, you know, I'm not the most innovative person in the world, and I'm sure there's people out there with really good ideas that can be brought forward and funded in some way through our group. And I think it would be good to open up that venue and say, hey, I've got an innovative idea to do X, or hey, I'm doing my clinic this way, and can I present that, or can people comment on that?
Sounds good. Well, great. I'm excited too. It's going to be a challenge, I think, and I'm glad that we're recording sessions too. So,
yeah.
You know, for people that can't make all the sessions, they'll have the opportunity to hear that. So thank you again. It's, as always, it's great talking to you, and this is a great way to kick off our podcast series, and hopefully we'll continue to keep this going. So take care and have a good rest of your day.
Yeah. Thank you, Joel. You too.